Well, in preparation for Speech Club this afternoon, the teens were asked to complete the lesson on the LIFT program, Life Insights for Teen, the first lesson in a series on education and training, which focused on vision. And I likewise want to cover a topic that I believe connects to both the pursuit of education and to vision. The vision that we each individually have for our lives, specifically. This message hopefully will not just be for the younger among us, but it's really for each of us in this room, because regardless of your age or your stage of life, we're constantly analyzing how the life circumstances around us fit within the vision that we had for ourselves. If you're young, you're building that vision now. You're looking out at your future, and you're deciding what you want to do with your life. And as adults, we're constantly reanalyzing those things, trying to do an assessment along the way and see how are things working out compared to what I hoped for my life, what I envisioned years ago. How we go about this constant inventorying of our lives and the impact that it has on us really depends on our vision. Our vision, our greater vision of not just what we want to accomplish in our life, but our vision of God and His purpose and His plan for us. I want to go back to 2 Samuel chapter 24 to begin today. 2 Samuel 24. We're going to read through this basic story here found in 2 Samuel 24. So we'll be doing a bit more reading to start the passage off here. We'll start here in verse 1. And I'm in the book of Deuteronomy. 2 Samuel 24. That was a lucky flip. Here we are. Verse 1. Again, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, "Go, number Israel and Judah." So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, "Now go throughout all the tribes of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, and count the people, that I may know the number of the people." And Joab said to the king, "Now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times more than there are, and may the eyes of my lord the king see it. But why does my lord the king desire this thing?" Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the army. Therefore, Joab and the captains of the army went out from the presence of the king to count the people of Israel. And they crossed over the Jordan and camped in Aroer on the right side of the town, which is in the midst of the ravine of Gad, and toward Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tadim-Hodshi. They came to Dan-Jaan and around to Sidon. And they came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and the Canaanites. Then they went out to south Judah as far as Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. That's how long it took to count, to number the people, as David instructed. In verse 9, then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king. And there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly." Verse 11, now when David arose in the morning, and the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, "Go and tell David, thus says the Lord, I offer you 3 things. Choose one of them for yourself, that I may do it to you." So Gad came to David and told him, and he said to him, "Shall 7 years of famine come to you in your land? Or shall you flee 3 months before your enemies while they pursue you? Or shall there be 3 days plague in your land? Now consider and see what answer I should take back to him who sent me." Just pause there for a second. Now we read this story. David basically took a census, numbered the people here. He recognizes that what he did was wrong. His heart condemned him, it says. And God didn't respond and say, it's not that big of a deal. He said, "Choose your punishment. 7 years of famine? 3 years? Or is it months? 3 months, excuse me, of fleeing before your enemies, or 3 days of plague in your land?" What David had done was a big deal to God. Verse 14, and David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Please let us fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great. But do not let me fall into the hand of man. You know, of all these options, let the one come upon me that is going to be God involved directly. I don't want to fall into the hands of my enemies or other people, what they think is appropriate. Let God decide. So the Lord sent a plague upon Israel from the morning till the appointed time. From Dan to Beersheba, 70,000 men of the people died. And when the angel stretched out his hand over Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord relented from the destruction and said to the angel who was destroying the people, it is enough. Now restrain your hand. And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. And David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking the people and said, surely I have sinned and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let your hand, I pray, be against me and against my father's house. We won't read the rest of the chapter, but at this point, God hears David's prayers, his cries for mercy, and he stops the destruction, but only after 70,000 people had been killed as a result of David's choice to number the people. It's obvious from reading through this account that David's numbering of Israel was a grave mistake that he later regretted. What seemed completely justified in his mind in the moment later brought about guilt, led him to condemn himself in his own heart, but that guilt and regret didn't remove the consequences of his actions. 70,000 people died as a result of his decision as king. What exactly was this numbering that David ordered? Who was numbered? What was its purpose? And why was it wrong? What was such a big deal about numbering the people? Why did David's heart condemn him after he had done it? And more importantly, perhaps, what does it have to do with us today? We'll explore these questions this afternoon, but they'll all eventually lead us to another question, which is really the focus and the title of the message. What are we numbering? What are we numbering? It may sound like an odd question at this point, but hopefully it'll become clearer as we go along. Because the truth is, brethren, we are all numbering something, whether we realize it or not. And we want to be sure that what we are numbering isn't something that seems justified in the moment, but leads us to later condemning ourselves in our hearts, or worse, that leads to casualties in our wake. Maybe not the death of 70,000 people, but pain, negative consequences because of the results of our decisions. So what was this numbering, and who was numbered? If you look at the account of the same event in 1 Chronicles 21, we're not going to actually go back there and read it, but if you were to go back and read the three preceding chapters, that's why we're not going to go back. I'm not going to read 1 Chronicles 18, 19, and 20 to you. But if you were to take the time to do that, those three chapters are all about David's military conquests. Victories are recorded over the Philistines, the Moabites, the Syrians, and the Ammonites. They were successful in these conquests. On some occasions, the result was even that tribute was being paid to Israel as a result of these conquests. Not only did they win the battles, but now some of these groups of people were paying tribute to David and to the nation of Israel. But looking at the context, this time frame was also a period of terrible personal and family troubles for David. It was during this battle against the Ammonites that's recorded in 1 Chronicles chapter 20 that it says it was the time when kings go out to battle, but David didn't go. He stayed home. And it was during that time when he lusted after Bathsheba, committed adultery, eventually orchestrated her husband's death to try to cover it all up. It was during that battle against the Ammonites that Uriah was killed. In that same general time frame, when you read through sections of 2 Samuel, there are stories about some other pretty terrible, tragic things happening in David's life and in the life of his family members, even his own children, being involved in things like incestuous rape, one brother murdering the other, one of his sons, Absalom, trying to overthrow his father and take over the throne. This is what was going on in the life of King David. Yet in the end, after all these things, God protected David. He established him back on the throne. David's life had been a roller coaster of successes and apparent defeats. But the end result was always God's provision, his blessing, and his defense when David prioritized God, when David stayed close to God, when he turned back to him in repentance. God was the one who established him as king, anointed him, and consistently delivered David throughout his life. Yet, David numbered Israel. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 24. Read verse 1. I guess we were already there, weren't we? 2 Samuel 24, verse 1. Just take a look at these verses once again. Again, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army, who was with him, now go throughout all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and count the people that I may know the number of the people. And what was this numbering? It wasn't just a census. There were times in Scripture when God actually told the leader, such as Moses, to count the people, to calculate how many were in each tribe. That's not what was happening here. Drop down to verse 9, and read verse 9 again. Then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king, and he didn't just provide a total number of the people. And there were in Israel, it says, 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword. And the men of Judah were 500,000 men. Again, a reference not just to people in total, but to soldiers. Valiant men in the army. David wanted to know exactly how many soldiers he had on his side. But why? What was the purpose of this numbering? On the surface, maybe it seems like a logical thing for a king or a leader of an army to do. If the story ended there, we'd probably just think not too much of this whole situation. We would chalk it up to wisdom in preparation, counting the costs before going into battle. Of course you want to know how many people you have available, right? But verse 10 told us clearly, David knew this was wrong. Verse 10, again, David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. And he said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. Why was it wrong? Why did David's heart condemn him after he had done it? Well, because he knew it wasn't just an innocent inquiry. It was more than just gathering information. Numbering the armies of Israel was a shift from David's normal approach of reliance upon God. Let's go back to Psalm chapter 20. Psalm 20. Psalm chapter 20 will begin in verse 1. The psalm is addressed to the chief musician, a psalm of David. May the Lord answer you in the day of trouble. May the name of the God of Jacob defend you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and strengthen you out of Zion. May he remember all your offerings and accept your burnt sacrifice, Selah. May he grant you according to your heart's desire and fulfill all your purpose. We will rejoice in your salvation, and in the name of our God we will set up our banners. May the Lord fulfill all your petitions. Now I know that the Lord saves his anointed. He will answer him from his holy heaven with the saving strength of his right hand. Notice verse 7. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. That's where our trust will be. Not in how many horses and chariots or soldiers there are in an army. The words of King David himself. They have bowed down and fallen, but we have risen and stand upright. Save, Lord. May the king answer us when we call. This is a psalm of David. The same man that said, some trust in chariots and some in horses, was now doing the exact same thing. At this point in his life, when there was so much turmoil inside himself, in his family. Numbering Israel was a shift from trusting in God to deliver and to provide and to bless and to sustain. It was a turn to an approach of looking to his own physical strength and might to find security there instead of doing exactly what he said in this psalm. Just don't worry how big the army is. Don't worry how tough the battle might be. Know the source of your strength. Trust in God and rely on him. And perhaps there was an element of pride involved as well in David's numbering of the armies of Israel. He had just experienced all of these military conquests. He was a valiant soldier. Remember what the people said about him. Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. This numbering of Israel was placing trust in the physical to bring victory, but it may have also been, in a part, an act of pride to kind of look and reflect on all that he had, all that he, quote unquote, had built or gained. Perhaps there's an element of that there. And the problem behind this numbering of the armies of Israel really had similar roots to his moral failures that he was experiencing in this point of his life as well. Now, he had been looking to the physical, not only for safety, for protection through an army. He had been looking to the physical for security, for satisfaction in life as well, for pleasure, even if it meant a departure from God's standards. He went from verse 4 here in Psalm 20. May he grant you according to your heart's desire and fulfill all your purpose. He went from that type of mentality to trusting in his own chariots, horses, strength, and even in his own efforts to try to fulfill what he saw as satisfying in his life. It's interesting that Joab, the commander of the army at this time, tried to talk David out of this numbering. If you go back to 2 Samuel 24 again, notice that again in verses 3 and 4. 2 Samuel 24, verses 3 and 4. This again tells us that there was more going on here than just counting up the people. Even Joab, the leader of the army, knew it was wrong. He tried to talk David out of it. Verse 3 of 2 Samuel 24. And Joab said to the king, now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times more than there are. And may the eyes of my lord the king see it. But why does my lord the king desire this thing? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the army. Therefore, Joab and the captains of the army went out from the presence of the king to count the people of Israel. You know, he eventually just followed David's instructions. But what he tried to tell him when David made this request was, don't worry about the numbers. May God bless and increase the numbers. We don't always recognize when our focus has shifted to numbering the physical. Sometimes other people close to us might recognize that and might try to give us a little nudge. Say, hey, your vision is clouded right now. Your perspective is a little off. And Joab said, you know, may God give this increase and may the eyes of my Lord the King see it. Perhaps he was referring to David's length of days. And may God cause this increase and blessing and may you live long enough to see it. But I can't help but read that phrase from another perspective, too. May God cause this increase in blessing, and may you recognize it. Recognize him as the source of this increase and this blessing. May you see it and see that the increase is because of him and not you. When we're focused on numbering things in our own lives, looking to human strength instead of trusting in God, we don't always see reality. We don't always recognize the help that God has ready and waiting for us. I have a vivid example of that recorded for us in 2 Kings. Not the life of David this time, but 2 Kings chapter 6. We'll begin in verse 8. This is in the life of the prophet Elisha. 2 Kings 6, begin in verse 8. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servants, saying, "My camp will be in such and such a place." And the man of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there." Then the king of Israel sent someone to the place of which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, and he was watchful there, not just once or twice. So, in essence, the king of Syria would make these plans with his advisors and say, okay, this is where we're going to try to attack them next. And God told Elisha, and Elisha told the leader of Israel, hey, don't go to this spot because that's where they're going to be waiting for you. Verse 11, therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, "Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" And one of his servants said, "None, my lord, O king. But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." So he said, "Go and see where he is, that I may send and get him." And it was told him, saying, "Surely he is in Dothan." Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. In verse 15, and when the servant of the man of God, so Elisha's servant, his assistant, you might say, when he arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do? We're completely closed in. We're surrounded by these armies of the enemy. God didn't come through this time. He didn't tell you." Verse 16, so he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Now, how many times in our lives is it possible that that's been the case? When we've felt like we're surrounded and we've numbered our own army and we know we don't stand a chance. How many times have we just been lacking the vision to say, "God, open my eyes. Help me to see where you're going to help. Help me to see where your armies are residing. Help me to see the strength of your hand instead of just focusing on mine." Looking to our own strength can blind us at times from seeing God's. We make plans for our lives. We put in our best efforts to bring about the results that will fit in with God's will for us. His will that's laid out for us in his precepts and his commandments. That preceptive will, if you've been reading the book on spiritual tools for growth. You know, we put in effort. We do our part. But all the while, we need to be praying that God causes the increase, that he fights for us, that he delivers us, even that he satisfies us, and that we may see it. We need to pray for vision. We need to pray that he'll open our eyes to see his help and to see him as the source of our satisfaction, rather than focusing solely on the physical, focusing solely on our own efforts. David numbered Israel. He numbered the soldiers in his army. And I think there could be a good argument made that at times he also numbered success, sexual pleasure, public opinion. I mean, why did he order the death of Uriah? He didn't want to look bad, right? In a more abstract way, David numbered these kinds of things too at times, because he placed too much trust in those things to bring him fulfillment and satisfaction in life. Numbering the armies of Israel was the most obvious example. God recorded it for us to learn from it. But what are we numbering? Job security? A minimum salary? For teens, maybe the perfect GPA that'll land you acceptance at your college of choice. Are we numbering a dream career? A few special letters at the end of our name that we can list there after we've earned our title. Now, it's challenging as a young person because we're in essence told in our society, if you can just figure out exactly what you want to do for the next 30 to 40 years of your life that'll make you happy every day and not feel like work at all and pay you well, then everything will be okay. Is that part of your vision? And is that numbering the wrong things? Is that not looking in the wrong direction for satisfaction? Looking in the wrong direction for physical things to fill a spiritual void that cannot be filled up by the physical? What are we numbering? Is it a perfect relationship? A happy marriage with the one? A better marriage? If maybe I had picked a better one. I'm not saying that personally. Just, you know, I'm very happy with my selection. Thank you. Is it a house full of perfectly obedient children? What are we placing our trust in, our satisfaction in? What are we numbering? Our health? Our savings account? A big fat 401k? Stockpiles of goods? You know, a few years back, maybe it was personal protective equipment we were numbering. How many bottles of hand sanitizer we had left? The number of squares of toilet paper you still had on hand? Although that one's tough for me, I still number that a bit because seriously, the next time someone uses 12 squares for one wipe, I'm... What are we numbering? Are we numbering knowledge? If I can just know more than others. Are we numbering our own opinions? Numbering how many people agree with us? The praise of others? How many likes or comments are on there now? How many thumbs ups did I receive when I shared that excellent piece of wisdom? Are we numbering freedom? Our rights? As if that's where our trust should lie. Now, many of these things are good, necessary parts of life, parts of our life plans even, or even wise precautions. But all of these things, and probably many more we could list, have the potential to be the object of our numbering when we begin to trust and to find our security in those things instead of in our relationship with God. When we number these things in our lives, these physical things, we can also forget where they truly came from to begin with. God said that would be the case, actually. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8, we'll begin in verse 11. There's so many different things we can number in this life. So many different areas where we can turn and look and expect, maybe this will satisfy me. Maybe this will make me feel secure. If I just have this many dollars in my bank account, if I just have this job, if I just have this relationship. Deuteronomy 8, beginning in verse 11. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied. When your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness, in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. And he's saying, remember where you came from. Remember what I did for you. Verse 17. Lest then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Now, as you set up a vision for your life, young people, plan for success. Make plans, dream big, build your life, experience the blessings that God provides along the way. Those are good things. But have the vision to recognize where it all comes from in the first place. Have the vision to keep it all in proper balance, to not get so focused on the physical that we begin to number it and trust in it. Keep God at the core, acknowledging his hand along the way, without convincing ourselves that somehow it's the strength of our own hand that got us the success that we have. After all, jobs are only secure until you're not essential enough anymore. A 401k can become a 201k overnight. Your career can turn out to have nothing to do with that specific degree that meant so much to you. Ask me how I know. Or you can fill up your life with all the physical things that you wanted to obtain and still feel empty. Vision can help keep these things in proper balance and perspective. Planning for your life or taking stock of how these plans are playing out in your life as you get older is well and good. But striving after physical things as if they're the results of our own excellence or as if they're the keys to our security and satisfaction is no better than numbering the soldiers in an army as if the victory comes from them. The truth is, brethren, we are all numbering something. And godly vision can help us ensure that we're numbering the right things. Three quick things that we should be numbering that can help us keep a proper perspective on the pursuits of our lives. Because God does want us to plan and to have vision for the future of what we want to do and what we want to accomplish, but all in the context of the greater vision of his plan and purpose for us. Let's go to Psalm 103. What should we be numbering? Psalm 103 points out one category of things we should be numbering and trusting in. Psalm 103, beginning in verse 1. Psalm 103, verse 1, a psalm of David. I'm not condemning David today in this message. God records some of these failures in David's life for us to help us to learn from them. Because he was a man after God's own heart who repented and always turned back to God when he made mistakes like this. And God records us these things for us so that we don't have to make the same mistakes. If we accept the wisdom from the examples recorded for us, the lessons we can learn, we don't have to go through the same type of pain, and we don't have to leave a wake of maybe 70,000 dead, or rather hurtful consequences of the decisions we make when we place our trust in the wrong things. Now, we can set ourselves up for failure at times if we create this vision for our lives and we think that it's those physical things that are going to bring us happiness or satisfaction or fulfillment. We not only set ourselves up for disappointment, we set other people up to disappoint us too. If you think your spouse is going to give you the fulfillment and satisfaction you need in every area of your life, you're setting that person up for failure. But there's consequences to your numbering. If you think a job is going to give you the satisfaction you need, you're setting your employer up for disappointment or to be a disappointment to you because it can't fill all the voids that God himself is supposed to fill. Back to my notes off the soapbox. Psalm 103, verse 1, a psalm of David. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. What should we be numbering? The blessings of God in our lives. Now, Deuteronomy 8 told us, think about where you came from. Think about what I did for you, lest you somehow think it was by the strength of your own hand. Well, David records here, bless the Lord, O my soul, forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfies your mouth with good things, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. When I read these verses, I see these different phrases here as some possible different categories that we can use to reflect on our lives. Where has God blessed me? How has he benefited me? Well, forgiveness, healing, redemption, acts of just simple loving kindness and tender mercies, things we didn't deserve at all that he's given to us, and him satisfying us with good things, renewing our youth, giving us the energy to do things. These are all benefits or blessings that we can reflect on. These are all things that we can number. Not in the sense of placing our trust just in the blessings, but to keep a proper balance in our minds on where the blessings actually came from. Now, how do we ensure that we don't forget these benefits? David said in verse 2, forget not all his benefits. By numbering them. Taking the time to reflect on them. Take stock and inventory. Not of all that we've accomplished on our own, but of what we've seen God do for us and through us. Numbering his benefits can keep us from the misguided trust of our own efforts. Let's look at another example of for those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. What should we be numbering? God's promises. When you look back on our lives, we forget not all his benefits, the blessings that God has provided in our lives leading up to this point. But we need to look to the future as well and number the promised blessings to come in the future. God's promises. It says, these all died in faith, not having received those promises, but having numbered them. It doesn't use that exact phrase, but that's in essence what's being talked about here. They hadn't received the promises yet, but they were assured of them. They embraced them, wrapped their arms and their lives around these promises, and confessed that this life wasn't what it was all about. That they were strangers and pilgrims here on the earth, waiting for something better in the future. These who died in faith numbered the promises of God rather than numbering the physical. We really could paraphrase, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having numbered them. They put their trust in the unseen and had a vision of the eternal future, which then gave context to their temporary plans for their own lives. And that should be the case for all of us, too. The vision God has given us through his plan should give context to the temporary plans we make for our short lives. We number God's involvement in our lives looking back at what he's done for us, looking ahead at the promises that he'll fulfill in the future. But there's one more thing I want to take note of here that he tells us directly to number. That's in Psalm 90, verse 12. Psalm 90, verse 12. This psalm is accredited at the beginning to Moses, the prayer of Moses, the man of God. And we'll just jump straight to verse 12 where he says, so teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now, this numbering referred to here is not in the sense of trust. God doesn't want us to trust the number of days we have left. Rather, this numbering is in a sense of recognition. Recognition of the limited quantity of days we have. We are to keep in proper perspective the limited nature of this physical life so that it can give us wisdom. Wisdom in the present. Realizing how limited our human existence is can help bring into check any self-reliance that might be present in us. In essence, we're encouraged to stop numbering the physical and remember that the physical is numbered. Stop numbering the physical and remember the physical is numbered. Now, learning not to look to the physical for security or fulfillment is a lesson that even King David had to discover. Unfortunately, his learning experience came with much emotional turmoil and even a 3-day plague that took the lives of 70,000 people. We have the benefit of learning from David's example without having to experience similar mistakes and consequences. We can take care not to allow our focus to be shifted to the physical by numbering and putting our trust in what we can see or what we can achieve. We can pray for spiritual vision and ask God for the eyes to see His strength in all that we do. Eyes to see His help at work in our lives. And the vision to remember that what we have or we desire to achieve will only be truly satisfying when we acknowledge it's from Him. And even then, we all know and acknowledge that these physical successes that we might experience in life pale in comparison to the fulfillment of the eternal plans that God has in store for us. What are we numbering? That really depends on our vision. So whether you're early in building your life or reflecting on the latter stages of it, let's be careful not to get so caught up in grasping for physical securities or pleasures that we lose sight of where our true strength and satisfaction comes from. Let's be careful with what we're numbering.